And good afternoon, and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laron Landis and late Patty Fink, who would have been here sooner had she not been...
Late.
Oh, no. Texting and driving.
Oh.
Illegally now, I might add.
I tried to do so on my car. My car's equipped to do that. But that's why it was very brief.
It is illegal now.
Yeah. You know, and her text comes in. It's prompt. She's been doing this, not texting, used to call, now she texts. But her text comes in promptly at 1:45. And, okay, this time she just said, on my way in with news. I said, I'll be there. I thought she had written, I'll be there shortly. I'll be there shortly means she won't be screeching into the parking lot. I'm on my way means, she might miss the first segment of the show.
Right.
That's a macro I have, too. All I have to do is, you know, a couple of letters. And it,
oh, that's cool.
But yes, we did want to point out, Patty was texting and driving, which as of this month is illegal, and that was a public service.
Yes, thank you. out there text or drive.
Yesterday was the Gay Pride Festival here in Dallas. Today is the parade starting at 2. Yeah.
Starts
at 2.
Still got time to get down there.
Won't have time to find parking, but you will have time to get down there.
Just Uber.
And I'm sure that's what a lot of people are doing.
Yeah.
There's been talk about the parade being too corporate, the parade being not grassroots anymore. What do you think of that? And we do have our grassroots parade, which is...
the Queer Bomb.
Thank you. In June.
Right.
And I love that event because it is just grassroots. It's just fun.
Yeah.
Well, it feels to me like a lot of the celebration that is Pride has been kind of sucked out of the event in many ways. I saw a post last night about somebody who took their kids, who took their water bottles, you know, that their personal water bottles, and they made them pour the water out at the gate.
Oh, wow.
And then they ran out of water to sell.
And yesterday, I think August finally hit. It was hot down there.
I mean, it was really hot. This is Texas, people. What? Dallas, Texas. And in the summer, I can't tell you how many prides we've done in the third Sunday of September where it's just been blazing.
Right.
And people actually have heat exhaustion and stuff. You know, and so I think to lighten up on some of that stuff, because that's really just...
I mean, what
nickel and diamond people?
And I was gonna say, is that the whole purpose, just to benefit?
Don't you
know?
Shouldn't
you know where that comes from?
Hydrated. You know,
here's where that comes from. That comes from Homeland Security. Homeland Security isn't looking at it as, oh well, this is a Pride parade. They're looking at it as, this is a Pride parade, and some infiltrators are going to come in and do some harm. And the post I saw, that post that you were talking about, Patty, and you're talking about kids.
Yeah.
You're not talking about domestic terrorists here.
They had even threatened to take away the water bottle and it was like a gift to the kid from a relative that there was.
And here's something that I read also, that they were planning on addressing those things because people who are running the parade do agree with that.
But it's those things that take the celebration kind of out of it.
Yeah. Right, although the best part of the festival yesterday to me was the teen pride area. And you know why? We were talking to a number of the kids who were there, and all of them said, this is my first pride. And I'm thinking, yeah, this is my 100th pride.
Exactly.
Having just had a birthday, I was kind of really feeling like, yeah, this is like pride number 376 for me. But the kids who were there, there was such joy. There was such excitement. They were just having fun and being kids and being there with other gay and lesbian and transgender kids and being themselves.
Yep,
and you don't want to take that away. And that's what Pride is about.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
One of the things I did last week that was so much fun, I went to the float manufacturer, Lone Star Floats, which is over on Westmoreland in West Dallas. And this manufacturer makes floats for 77 parades a year.
Wow.
Wow.
This one, he's doing 30 of the floats that'll be in the parade today, so he does more for this parade than for any other parade.
Wow.
He's been doing this since 1970-something, where he worked for his parents' float company in South Carolina, and he's opened his float company here in 1982. And he and his whole family run this company. They only have two other employees, plus some truck drivers who actually deliver the floats. Mm-hmm. Well, it was fascinating. Floats themselves are wider than a traffic lane. Well, you can't drive a float from here to San Francisco wider than a traffic lane. So all the floats fold up.
Oh, interesting.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And then they're just taken on a flatbed and they're delivered.
And you get there and you go, ta-da, because you unfold it all.
Right.
It's a whole process to tie and untie and wrap and unwrap these floats. But it was fascinating. He has a whole room that's the glitter room.
Oh.
His wife runs the glitter room.
So that must be our room. Yeah.
Yeah, except they use it in every parade.
How about the unicorn room? They have a unicorn room?
No unicorn room, although there are some unicorns. He showed me all of their stored stuff that they can reuse on floats, you know, like tin soldiers and
right.
other stuff like that, cupcakes. And okay, so the glitter room, you know, the Austin parade was put off. Austin wanted to do their parade today, and he told them, then you're not getting floats. So theirs is on the 30th. And then Fort Worth parade is the 6th, 7th. It's Saturday, the first Saturday in October. Mm. And he was worried. He said, you know, we get our supplies from around the country. Glitter comes from, obviously, Florida.
Did not know that.
You would
fields
think,
and fields and fields.
You would know better. You would think San Francisco, but no, it comes from Florida. So he said, if the glitter factory took a direct hit, there's not going to be much glitter for Austin because he's using all of it in the Dallas parade.
Yeah, and when winds of 200 miles per hour hit the glitter factory, that must be quite a sight.
Uh-huh.
Tell me about it.
So anyway, but that was fascinating to see him putting together these floats with so few people. I mean, it's just him, his son, his daughter, their spouses, and that's it. And they manufacture, I mean, they're working all week long, and then on Saturday they deliver the floats, Sunday they're in the parade, and tonight they'll start going back to the factory, then he has to rip all the stuff off of the float, and the average float use and they reuse the frames.
Mm-hmm.
He had one frame he showed me is 25 years old.
Wow.
They're that well preserved because in order to keep them from rusting, mm-hmm. by hand they remove each of the, takes an average of 15,000 staples to hold all the decorations
wow.
on the floats by hand. They
take
remove
all
of it.
Oh, wow.
Is that a repetitive.
Who would have thought that you could have a float business 9 to 5 year long,
mm-hmm.
all around the year?
Just all kinds of floats. There's Martin Luther King Day, yep. there's Labor Day, there's 4th of July,
right.
There are Pride Parades. He does Houston, which is in June. He does several of the others that are in June. But most of his June is taken up with 4th of July parades that are all over the country in smaller cities as well as larger. There are Memorial Day parades. There are parades for all kinds of events. And then small cities have parades for something that's very local also. You know, all kinds of Christmas parades, Thanksgiving parades, and he participates in 77 of them around the country, mostly
wow.
Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana is the bulk of his business, but he goes as far as the East and West Coast to deliver floats.
That is fascinating.
Isn't that fascinating? Mm-hmm. But watching them put this stuff together and, you know, seeing all the giant props that he has around his this shed. It's a huge industrial shed that he has. Just fascinating to see. It was so much fun.
Well, New Orleans has a famous float maker as well with a giant warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And they put together all of that stuff for Mardi Gras every year.
Yeah. After Katrina, he moved here. Morning News went to Lone Star Floats and asked him, what does he think of this competition? And he said smugly, he said, I know what his prices are. I'm not really worried. Welcome to Dallas. When he came here, do you know how many floats he sold? Zero. And within a couple of years, moved back to New Orleans.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Because it's a different type of float and just on a whole different level for Mardi Gras.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, if we have a glitter room in our area, that's
makes the place
cool.
special.
And I wonder, you know, if they've been so successful all this time, maybe they don't need this, but it would be kind of cool, or, you know, to have a gay creative director.
Do you know?
Because I bet there's some ideas they haven't even hit on.
You know, he does a great job with it. It's not like, you know, yes, he's there working with his son, his daughter, their spouses. There was nothing when I called him and said I'm from the gay paper. He said, oh, come on out. You know, it was nothing like, oh, the gay paper, what's he going to write about it? None of that at all. It was just, you know, and he's my age, so.
I'm just thinking they could just, like, crank their creativity, though. They had, like.
Oh, he's real creative. He's extremely creative. I mean, just seeing all these props that were all over the place, it was like walking around Munchkin Land. You know, it was great. It was great.
And you still have a chance to get down there. Parade starts at 2. Mm-hmm. It'll come down Cedar Springs, starting at, I think, Wycliffe. Mm-hmm. It'll start coming down Cedar Springs toward Turtle Creek. And then it's going to hang a ride at Turtle
Creek. Ends. Nope. Parade ends at Turtle Creek this year.
Oh.
Yeah.
But the festivities following are going to be in Reverchon Park.
That was yesterday.
There's no park stuff today. Mm-mm. It's just parade.
Just parade today.
Oh, that is a change.
Yeah,
because last year and even the year before that, it was all on the same day.
It's always been on the same day. And that meant that if you were at the end of the parade, you didn't really get to enjoy the park. If you were at the beginning of the parade and you wanted to watch the parade. So the festival and the parade interfered with each other. This way, we had a whole festival yesterday. You know, in the teen section alone, I was there about 2 hours, I think, after it started, and 3,000 teens had already come through the gate.
Wow.
3,000 kids through the gate. You know, can you imagine when you were a kid, Patty and Lauren, years and years ago when you were a kid, going to a gay teen festival and 3,000 kids had been there?
That would have been amazing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Probably life-changing.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Wouldn't your whole life have been easier as a kid if you went to a festival where that was just 2 hours after, and people were streaming in the whole time I was there. So.
Wow.
Yeah, it was fun. Here's my complaint about the festival. Parking.
Yeah, there's no parking.
Parking, parking, parking. There is none. They made an arrangement with DART. You could park at Market Center Station. And there was a shuttle bus going. That's a couple of hundred spaces. Do you know who really angers me? Are these office buildings that are right around there, and they were each approached, and all of them have refused to allow their parking to be used on a weekend when the building is closed.
Yeah.
And nobody said to them, you can't make money off of this. Charge $10 for parking.
Yeah.
That building at 3500 Maple, right across the street, you want to charge $10, people would have paid it.
Sure. Absolutely they would.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what they were afraid of. When I left, and I left about 4:30-ish, something like that, the festival had been going on since 11. You're worried about litter all over the place? I didn't see any litter anywhere in the park area. It was as clean a festival, and then along the streets, again, as clean a festival as you could possibly imagine. That kind of stuff doesn't happen at a pride parade.
Right.
Plus, city requires cleaning crews go through. You want us to clean your parking lot afterwards? Not a problem.
Right.
All of that was offered. They refused to open their parking lot. Not just them, but every major building in Oak Lawn.
Wow.
You know, you want some concessions with your building? Be part of the community. Mm-hmm. And every one of those buildings has asked for concessions when they were being built.
Yeah.
We have very strict zoning here, unlike some cities to the south of us that were flooded. And that's part of the problem they had with their flooding, is their unrestricted zoning. You live in a floodplain, there should be lots and lots of zoning, not less. But you want to be part of the community. You want to build your office building that's going to create traffic every other day of the year for me living in that neighborhood. Well, then be part of the community.
Yeah.
I just really hate that.
So one of the other complaints in past years, I don't know how it's going to turn out this year, is some of the floats, skimpy dressing.
They addressed that last year.
Yeah, they did. So what are the rules now?
You can still be skimpy, but you can't show anything. And are we being prudish about this? Well, LaRon is, but there are lots of kids at the parade.
But you know what? I didn't get into any debates, but I saw a lot of debates on Facebook about this last year. There's a lot of pushback from those who want to dress skimpy against those who have kids. And they were like, you know what? These parades aren't for the kids. If you want to bring them, fine. But we shouldn't have to, bring it down for them. So there were some pushback. There was some pushback on each side.
Yeah, I think they came up with a good compromise, though. If you're wearing especially white, tight boxers and it rains, you have to have a pair of shorts on the float to slip on.
Right.
So, because there was one year that was the skimpy short disaster, and that was the last time it rained, yeah. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Ron Landis and the late Patty Fink. And Chris, we'll be right back. Chris is running the board for us today. His evil twin will be with us next segment.
Guys, I'm CeeDee Kerbin, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with LaRon Landis and the late Patty Fink. And we were just talking about the parade. Parade starts in about 40 minutes. If you live anywhere near the parade route and you're thinking of driving, don't just walk over there because their parking is going to be tight. But this week, we're going from a festival that was celebrating to a demonstration yesterday that wasn't so happy, were they?
No, they weren't. And in fact, we're talking about the removal of the Robert E. Lee and Companion, or as I call them, Bob and Boyfriend, statue from Lee Park, which finally took place, Thursday. I think it's interesting, somebody texted me earlier, a comment on Facebook was like talking about the protesters who were open carry kind of versus the gay pride parade today and the festival yesterday, and they said, don't bring a gun to a dildo fight.
Yeah, at the pride parade, open carry means beer.
Right.
Right.
But, or a fabulous unicorn horn, right?
Well, my story that I wrote on it, and I got down there, somebody called us and said they're removing the statue, and so I flew out of the office and got down to Lee Park about 3:30 before the crane even got there. I was there till almost 8 o'clock when they finally got rid of it. And last Wednesday, week ago Wednesday before that, they thought they were 30 minutes away from removing the statue. Well, they misunderestimated.
Right, right.
And just to bring you up on it, my post was called Six Times the Charm, because that Wednesday they were working and working and working. Problem was, in 1936, when that statue was placed, the tradition was to place the statue on a pedestal, period. It was the height of the Depression. Well, this statue turned out to be bolted down and cemented down. So they had to pry up the cement. They had to saw off the bolts that were there. And they were more than a half an hour away from removing. Anyway, before they could remove it, there was a restraining order, which was lifted the next day. The attorney who had filed the complaint, the restraining order was from North Carolina, and he was basically asked by the federal judge, what are you doing in my district, in my court?
He had no standing.
He didn't have standing. And the person from Dallas who filed the restraining order, who was going to suffer irreparable harm, even though he lived in Dallas 25 years and was going to see the statue for the went to see the statue for the first time just a few weeks ago, he was going to suffer irreparable harm. They were both found to be not credible and thrown out. Anyway, then the next day, after the restraining order was lifted, the crane, which had gone away, couldn't get there in time, and it was in the middle of rush hour traffic, couldn't get there. Because that was a humongo crane. Then that crane ended up going down to Houston, doing some work down there. On its way back, there was a crash. An 18-wheeler crashed into it, did extensive damage to the crane, and the driver of the 18-wheeler was killed. Here's the thing that's interesting about that. I saw Jim Schutz this week, and he was asking for information from the police. I sent in, something for information to the police a couple of times. Normally, if the police aren't releasing information, they'll just say, we have no other additional information to release at this time. They're not answering.
Wow.
Which is bringing out the conspiracy theorists in all of us. Did that truck driver purposely crash into the crane? We know it's under investigation. It has to be. Otherwise, they'd answer us and just say,
no, it was an accident.
You know, they'd say it's an accident, or they'd say, pending investigation, we're not releasing any other information. Anyway, so then they couldn't find another crane to come because there were serious, credible threats against all the crane operators. Mm-hmm. The next day, finally, not the next day, on Thursday this week, they finally found a crane to remove the statue. The crane had all of its identifying information, covered.
Covered up. The license plate, the name.
Everything, yeah. And drove with police escort. Right. So, then the same group that filed the restraining order filed an injunction. Unfortunately, because it was late in the afternoon, I heard about it at 3:30. They might not have heard about it right away either. By the time it got to Fitzwater's court, he was gone.
Yes, after hours. Too bad.
I don't know if it was after hours. I think he might have finished up what he was doing and left a little bit early that day. because we heard about it before 5 o'clock, and we were thinking, okay, this is going to stop again. And they started working and working and working on it. Could not lift that statue. It was a smaller crane, so the crane drove right up next to the statue, and it was a lower flatbed that they got to haul it off because they realized the 14-foot statue on the higher bed wasn't going to get under underpasses on this very low-slung flatbed. It did. I was amazed. It went under traffic lights, barely, and it did go under underpasses. Going up Hall Street, it went under the Katy Trail. I was surprised.
Totally, it's shocking. Otherwise, we would have had headless horsemen.
Yes.
And that's what we were worried
about.
It's
12,600 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I was not confident that it would that little trailer could manage that.
It had six tires, and what I looked, and I even checked my photos, those tires did not deflate at all. I don't know, maybe they were solid rubber?
That's what they do in France. A lot of cars that have solid rubber, so they never go flat.
Plus it wouldn't deflate from that extra weight, and maybe this flatbed is designed for heavy loads or something. But six tires, and it didn't deflate at all.
I loved the photo of it driving down the highway. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was pretty fun.
Yeah.
And you know, they drove off in the wrong direction. It was just sunset as it was driving, and I wanted to get that perfect picture, Robert E. Lee driving off into the sunset, and I didn't get it because they went east. So, okay, so what do you think of the removal?
I think I'm very proud of our city, of Dallas, for removing that statue. It's a rallying point for hate. And, above and beyond all the other reasons it should be gone, it was put there to reassert Jim Crow and say that white supremacy was the law of the land in Texas. And there were similar installations in 1936 all across Texas at the time. because it was Klan driven. And there's every reason to remove it and no reason to keep it.
You're erasing history.
Well, I...
I heard that I don't know how many times while I was at the park.
Yeah,
I know, but I love the tweet back when Charlottesville, right after Charlottesville, where somebody said, which part of your history / heritage does the statue honor? The treason or the human slavery?
Yeah, here's the other part of it. If you're really honoring and upholding history, when you go and see that statue, which side won?
Right.
Do you really get accurate history from that statue?
No, you don't. It's glorifying one man and his boyfriend. One man. It's not glorifying those who died. Maybe you had family members and ancestors who weren't slave owners, who weren't directly involved, but they fought for their community. And that doesn't honor them. Mm-hmm. It says Robert E. Lee on it.
So the question that I heard from more people, what's next? Are you going to plow under the battlefields like Gettysburg? Well, no, that honors the people who fought, and that is history. This is where it took place.
And tens of thousands died.
So, there's not even talk about erasing that or building on that or hauling it off. You can't really haul a battlefield off, but any monuments that are there, it's not too... That's history.
There's no history involved with the statue.
I'm glad they took it down, everything that Patty just said, and I think this is a good teachable moment for our community and communities across the country. Most people already know what those statues stood for. A lot of people who are championing to keep them did not. And now they probably, once they learn the truth, they will still try and deny it and write off as fake news or something. But I think this has been a good teachable moment. It's like what these statues really stood for.
Okay, now, I was talking to this one woman as they were lifting the statue off the pedestal. And by the way, it was cemented down in some places. But you know how it looks like there are bricks around the top? When they had to pry off part of those in order to finally crowbar it off and get it up, it was sitting on top of those bricks. And there was a space about, 3 inches, where they were actually reaching in and trying to feel where there was more cement and chip that away. So it's interesting, all these years on something that looked, and the fact that it was so into place and they couldn't get it off that pedestal, it wasn't actually sitting on the entire pedestal, it was sitting on these bricks. Anyway, I was talking to this one woman, she's 82 years old. Statue's been there 81. She's been an Oak Lawn resident her whole life. And she showed me a picture, and it was in black and white, actually sepia and white, and little baby sitting in front of the statue, and she said, "This is me at one."
Wow.
So the picture was taken 1936 or 37, she said. And she was sad to see it go, not because of any of the Robert E. Lee history, but because it's been part of her neighborhood since she was a baby. And there was nothing prejudiced about what she was saying. She was just sad to see a statue that had been there for the 82 years of her, or 81 of the 82 years of her life, it's been there. I get that.
Where did it go?
I get that. They put it in city storage. Chris just asked, where did it go? And they put it in city storage. They've had offers to purchase it, which will pay for the removal. And chances are the city is going to accept one of those offers. In fact, one of the people who offered, and I don't know if he had the best bid or anything, I just heard one of the people who offered was Robert E. Lee's great-grandson.
Who also is for the removal. He thinks
right.
It should have been taken down.
He doesn't have an interest in putting it in his yard so that white supremacists can rally there.
No.
But it's his great-grandfather.
Yeah.
I think that's an appropriate one. I'd kind of like to see him get it.
A family member, that would be...
That's appropriate. It's perfectly. When other people say we're honoring our history, you're just honoring the people who fought in the war. Well, nobody's saying anything about all the soldiers who fought. But here, in his case, he is honoring his family, just like other people want to honor their family. I get that. That's perfectly appropriate, I think. You know, I don't want to see anything bad happen to the statue. It's a It's a beautifully done piece of bronze work. So, the boyfriend, Josh again just asked what happened to the boyfriend. It was two horses that were attached, and a rider on each horse. It's one piece. So when they lifted it up, it's not like they had to lift up one horse lift up off the other. It's one big bronze piece. So, and I was told one thing is historically inaccurate about the statue. The rider was supposed to be on the other side.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm. So, and I've heard that before, but somebody who was against removing the statue had to prove that he knew more about it than anybody else. But I actually had heard that before. So, historically that is accurate.
Well, I know there's different meanings. If the horse has a leg lifted, or depending if they're wearing a sword or whatever,
come out of battle.
There are indications about whether the person riding it had died in battle or died later after whatever they're being honored for. You know, there's different signals or whatever that people would put into those statues. And but you don't see statues around Germany of Hitler.
Exactly.
And these are all like analogies.
You don't see statues, Civil War statues across the North, which won the war, which is kind of interesting. What you do see in the Northeast are statues to the Revolutionary War. Mm-hmm. Thomas Paine's cottage was right near the house where I grew up, and that's a historical site to go and see his house. But there are pillars and other statues to the Revolutionary War. Now, right after the Revolutionary War, there were still lots of royalists. You don't see any statues to King George.
No, and in fact, there's a meme floating around that they were tearing down the statue of George III at some point in the revolution. And, they said, oh, now, American Revolution fighters tear down the statue of George III. Now we won't know who won the American Revolution. that's why nobody knows who won the American Revolution. See, all these arguments are just garbage. They're just, it's just an excuse. Because they really want that rallying point.
Here's the part of history that we're not remembering. That because we're taking down the statue, of course we remember history, right?
Right.
So a motorcyclist driving down Hall Street, person has on a Nazi helmet, and he's rallying for the statue and screaming about the Jews and the Jews are ruining whatever. But this is Civil War history he's remembering, right? Okay, which side did most Jews fight on in the Civil War?
South.
The South. Why? Because they lived here. Because New York didn't become a point of entry for Jews until after the Civil War. So if you were Jewish who was the first congressman from Dallas? David Kaufman. First Jewish congressman in U.S. history was from Dallas. Why? Because Jews lived here, not up there. So don't tell me that that statue is teaching you history, because it isn't.
Right.
So anyway, we have a couple of minutes. I know you have several things you want to get to, but let's just talk about Edie Windsor for a minute. Edie Windsor passed away.
Yeah. Edie Windsor passed away earlier this week at the age of 88.
88.
And she, her name will live on in landmark Supreme Court cases, mm-hmm. United States v. Windsor. And Windsor won that case.
Yep.
And it that basically
and proved me right. I love this about her. For years,
David has been going on and on about
and on and on and on
and on and on about. I mean, this goes way back to the crack house.
Yeah, it does.
David has been going on and on and on about how the path that we're going to get to marriage equality is going to be through taxes, and I'll be damned it was.
Because
it
was a tax. He always talked about taxes in New York. The state of
yes,
New York.
Yes.
And he said, it's going to be, like in New York, blah, 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 blah. just go on and on and on about it. And damn if United States v. Windsor wasn't taxes in New York.
Right. And I was right.
And for those who are listening,
you're so right.
For those who are listening, don't have any idea what we're talking about. Edie Windsor, a partner passed away, and because New York didn't recognize the legal marriage, she was stuck with an over $300,000 tax bill.
They had gotten married, actually, in Canada.
Right.
And then they, at the time, I don't believe New York recognized marriage, but no. But New York eventually did.
Eventually they
as
did.
As a state.
But all right. But not at the time.
Right. And so this is the part of the Defense of Marriage Act, I believe it was Section 3, I think, that was struck down as a result of this. And that was the section that said that the federal government, the United States government, could not recognize marriages between two people of the same sex.
Because had she been married to a man, this would have never happened.
Right.
Right, never. Because a married spouse, you just inherit everything from exactly. that person. If there's no will, if there's a will, it's distributed, however. But from your spouse, you do not pay inheritance tax.
Exactly. So because we won this, or she won this case, that opened the door for marriage equality. Mm-hmm.
And she was represented very, very obviously ably represented by a wonderful attorney, Roberta Kaplan, mm-hmm. Who subsequently represented the state of Mississippi, or the same-sex couples in, right. in Mississippi, in their Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, that was heard at the same time, the same morning that Texas and Louisiana were heard, mm-hmm. and I was there for that. And what a powerhouse! What a powerhouse! Mm-hmm. And she made some wonderful, you know, posts on Facebook with, you know. About Edie's passing, but I thought that President Barack Obama had his statement about Edie's passing was just.
He said he got to speak to her just before she died.
Yeah, just a few days before she passed away.
Mm-hmm. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Lauren Landis and the late Patty Fink, and now Josh is working board. So.
This is Rollins Gelland, and I'm listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3, and darn glad to be doing it.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Lauren Landis and the late Patty Fink. And we're just talking a little bit of news. Today's the parade day down on Cedar Springs Road. Parade starts in about 20 minutes. We were talking about the crane removing the Robert E. Lee statue. You know, the crane that they got, I don't think I said this, it was a smaller crane than last time, so they had to bring it right up next to the statue, and instead of hauling it all the way up in the air, you know, we're expecting this, and I ran down, I wanted to get this dramatic picture of the statue being lifted. They lifted it like 2 feet and just yeah, over and down.
Over. Yeah.
Right. So no dramatic pictures, but... But the statue is gone, and there were protests yesterday about, they were expecting 200, about 50 people showed up, about 200 police officers showed up with the entire tactical squad was there, every single one of them. They were expecting trouble, only one arrest, though. And to be fair, the people who filed the permit told the police, they said this is going to be a peaceful rally. And it was. I mean, you might not agree with what they were doing, even if you're on the side of the statue should stay, it was a peaceful rally. They said it was going to be a peaceful rally, and it was.
Good.
So.
Good.
Well, I hope that those who are celebrating the statue and want the statue to stay do delineate themselves from everybody else, because those are the people that really are the hardcore racists. They're, I mean, they're motivated by racism. And that's fine with me. If they want to own that, that's cool.
Yep.
Yep.
And, you know, and they're worried that that out of this, people are not going to learn history.
Please.
Yeah. Well, then write your state representative and state senator and tell them we need more funding for education.
Yes, that's a great solution, because they're... you know, they're burning Texas kids by burning funding. You know, it's
on to one other thing, the hurricane. I agreed with Dan Patrick for the first time this week.
No way.
Completely agree with him. He said, and I said the exact same words the week before, they're worried about using any of the rainy day fund for Houston. And I said, well, if there's ever been a rainy day, we just had one, didn't we? 50 inches of rain. It's never rained that much. in one storm. If that's a rainy day fund, this is the day to use part of that rainy day fund to help with recovery. And they're talking about, and they said they don't even need to call a special session to do this. They're talking about using about $1 billion of the rainy day fund for Houston recovery. And that's great.
Good.
That's great. That is what they need to do.
And aptly named rainy day fund.
Well, you know, that was meant as a metaphor. Who knew that they were going to actually use it because of a rainy day? But if that's what you're calling it, if that's what it is, use it.
In other news, John McCain is, I think this is kind of big news. John McCain is co-sponsoring a bill which would block Trump's military trans ban.
Mm-hmm.
So that's actually pretty good.
And in the good news in that department, too, the Pentagon announced that transgender soldiers who are currently serving and have been serving can reenlist and are welcome to do so.
Do you know, Trump wanted them to do a study. I think the Pentagon's response was, it was studied. We know that our best transgender soldiers are some of our best soldiers, and they do a fine job.
And,
well,
oh, go ahead.
Don't go get, well, the bill, here's exactly what it would do. It would not direct Pentagon to accept transgender people into the armed forces. So it won't do anything as far as new enlistees. Instead, it relies on a military study on the issue announced June 30th, and it gives it a February 21st next year deadline for the study to reach Congress. I don't know what they need to study for, but that's really what the bill would do.
The bill was sponsored by Collins from Maine and Gillibrand from New York, so it is bipartisan. John McCain signing onto this is impressive, because if anybody's military experience is respected in the House or in the Senate, well, in the House as well, but in the Senate is John McCain.
And so, across the country, except for the White House.
Yeah. Okay, except for the White House.
Mm-hmm.
You're not respected because you lost.
You got captured.
You got captured.
Yeah. He likes people that, you know, don't get captured.
Right.
Please, the draft dodger. Those bone spurs, it must be why he has to ride a golf cart at major global summits. Everywhere.
It's interesting how we fought for years to get rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And isn't it interesting that the trans ban coming soon after that, because, okay, we lost on the gays, we lost on the lesbians, let's go after the trans, and how it's not coming from us, and by us I mean the whole LGBT community, so much as the argument against it is coming directly from the military.
Yeah.
Why do you think
and
that is?
And from within Congress.
And within Congress, because none of these senators, John McCain wasn't speaking up for lifting the ban.
Right.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's because I think people are a lot more educated than they were even 5 years ago.
Right.
I think there's been a lot more concentrated education, and certainly with the issue of bathroom bills around this country, Democrats understand what that's about, and Democrats know that, you know, transgender people are heavily involved in the party and heavily involved in community, and most get that, and I think a lot of Republicans got it as well. In fact, there were some evangelicals who had been calling for the funding for medical treatment in the military to be cut back, you know, in spite of the fact that, you know, millions and millions are spent on Viagra alone.
Mm-hmm.
But and that the cost of transgender health care is, you know, nominal compared to what it, you know, all the other expenses that go on. But they were trying to dial it back after Trump did the tweet that said no more. They said that we didn't ask for that. I mean, they were wanting to make it clear that they did not ask for that. And so even hateful evangelicals get it.
Right.
That, you know, that this is way beyond the pale.
I think it's also education, but I think it's also common sense. I think people have realized on this subject that it's common sense that if you're in the military and you're out in the battlefield and you're hurt, I don't think you really give a damn about the gender of the person who's pulling you to safety. And the fact that there's already active trans individuals in the military.
Thousands.
And they've gotten to know them. They're like, okay, we've had no problems with them. Mm-hmm. I think those are the things why they're kind of stepping up and like, no, we don't want this. They never wanted it.
You know what, another thing, I think it goes back this far. During the Iraq War, they were throwing out people who were gay. And they threw out a whole class of Arabic translators because most of the class was gay. You know, at the time we had a discussion and we were saying, isn't that odd? Is there something about gay people? You know, we have certain traits, sort of, that doesn't translate to everybody, but is there something about being gay that gives us better language abilities? You know, it just seemed odd that so many people in a class would have been gay. And, you know, of course, there's no proof of that at all, but it was just something we were speculating. I think it goes back that far, that instead of keeping people that we needed just because of something that has nothing to do with their job, because being gay has nothing to do with whether I can read this piece of paper and translate it into English for you. Instead of doing the sensible thing, we got rid of all these people, and it put us at a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. Well, they're looking at trans people. You're saying, Patty, thousands of them. They're saying, ooh, that's my best so-and-so, and oh, and that one is my best something else. So they're looking at people and seeing, no, that's a skill I need, that's a skill I need, over there's a skill I need. Put this together, and we throw all these people out. Why?
We're making our military weaker, not
right.
stronger.
Right. This is a person over mm-hmm. here who's caused kind of trouble. We're not really waiting for them to re-enlist. But my trans person is somebody I rely on every day. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if a number of them, because they know they're pioneers in being the open trans troops, they excel. They go above and beyond just going to work every day. So I think that's part of why the military has stepped up. The other part, like you were both saying, people have been educated, you know, since Windsor, and then since Obergefell, and now people get married, and the sky didn't fall.
And I think through a lot of this, you know, the bathroom bill stuff, I think a lot of people have become educated. I think a lot of people have taken a side. Because they've had to, even within themselves, maybe not even expressed it to others, but they get it. And I think there's been this enormous new visibility because of that. We certainly saw the galvanization of the trans community in Texas mm-hmm. because of the bathroom bill, and people know each other now, and they work together, and they formed groups that regularly communicate. And, you know, for example, they had the VMA Awards. They had out trans service members, you know, appeared on stage together. And I thought that was really very cool. So I think a lot more people get it. And there's a different vibe today, I think, under Trump, who obviously, you know, started this whole ban process, that there's a resistance to what he thinks is appropriate in his gut mm-hmm. is not appropriate. Because I think at heart, he's a bigot.
Absolutely.
I think in so many ways, expressed in almost every way.
Yeah, there was absolutely no need for this. The military didn't call for it. This was just a personal vendetta that he did.
I think so.
That was totally on him.
And I think that he's using the trans community as pawns. And you know, when we see this over and over again, how this president will... you know, concede something on one side, like he's trying to do some sort of deal with Chuck and Nancy on DACA.
On DACA, yep.
But he's going to give something then to his base. And so he gets super bigoted in some other way, like coming back to this Charlottesville stuff yesterday and the day before, where he's back to, well, there's bad people on both sides.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, that garbage. So, I mean, in his mind, I think he's trying to balance, you know, so that they don't get really angry.
Well, it's a Fox News thing, fair and balanced.
Right. That's why when you do something decent, you know, you like remotely even reproaching decent, then you've got to do something really, really crappy and harsh and bigoted on the other side in order to balance that goodness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just an odd thing.
We're running out of time, but good segue from trans individuals. Something big happened this week in California on Wednesday. They passed a bill, and it would make them the first state to recognize a third gender. Now, it still needs to go through the assembly, and after that, then we don't know if the governor's going to sign it or not. But, it, I mean, it's got a lot of support.
Why do you think that's a good idea, or don't you?
I'm kind of neutral on it. I've always been about, you know, refer to yourself what you want to. I will respect that and refer to you what you want me to refer to you as. But for a third gender, I don't know legal third gender. I don't know the purpose of that.
I am all for it. The first country to do it was Nepal. Mm-hmm. The second country to do it was Germany. And now, if California does it, I think we've got to really break that mindset that gender is binary. And it's so fixated. I mean, you could just hear it coming out of the floor of the Texas Senate and the repeatedly from lots of different right-wingers that they're firm about this. You're either male or you're not. Right. You're male or female. And I say male or not because they don't even recognize females because males get, you know, all rights. And it's right. Daddy state. And, right. You know, all of that. Women don't have any rights. But I don't think they really want... They don't even acknowledge the existence of intersex people, much less transgender people, much less gender nonconforming people. And so I think that from an educational standpoint, to be able to have at least one state, and that's why I think, too, it's almost like, you know, the mail-in voting that we see in Oregon. You know, I think that's another great place where we can do education by having a law in a state where they're the first one. Let's see how it goes. And then it begins to make people think. And so I'm very happy that they're doing
well,
that.
Well, I'm definitely not against it. I said I was neutral, but I'm definitely not against it. I just said I don't know what the purpose would be. Like David and I were talking before the show, there are times gender does matter. And then I can't think of a broader place that it does matter, and that is in the medical field. When you go to the doctor, they're going to need to know, you know, if you're a trans woman, well, you might want to tell them that you were born, you know, a male, because there's different medications for the same disease for male and females. I don't know why, but it just is. So in that aspect...
And certain people have had gender reassignment surgery, but that doesn't include everything. And
exactly.
You'd need your doctor to know if you're male, if you're male to female, if you still have prostate gland, then you need to be checked for prostate cancer.
Exactly.
But you know what? That should be between you and your doctor.
And if you have if you have a third gender, then it gives everybody an opportunity to talk.
Well, yeah, that's a really good point. If you are identifying as a third gender when you go to the doctor, I'm sure if he looks at your chart, he's going to say, "Well, we need to discuss more about this."
And I work in healthcare IT. And there's a difference between what's called an administrative sex, mm-hmm. and a clinical sex. And administrative sex is more about what's on your papers, what's on your driver's license, your mm-hmm. passport, your birth certificate, all those things. But what you present legally, mm-hmm. versus what you are clinically. And so right now, it's still trying to stuff everything in both of those kind of systems, the administrative sex and clinical sex, stuff reality into two options.
Now, one problem that I see with needing to talk to your doctor is on any of these ads for any of these new medications that come out, it always says things like, and if you've had a kidney transplant, please discuss this with your doctor. Well, I didn't do the kidney transplant myself. I would think my doctor knew about it. So I'm not getting that point of it.
Perhaps, but you could easily switch doctors.
And they don't say that if you're doing a medical intake. I know that that's more aimed at if you have just gone to a clinic and your doctor doesn't know that you're on this drug or that you've had, you should discuss this with him.
Right.
I'm sure that's what they mean, but it comes out so dumb that what it says to me is, oh, people don't talk to their doctors, do they? I know my father never did.
In lots of situations, yeah. A lot of people don't. But I think by having a third gender, it's just a reflection of reality. It's male, female, and neither of those. You know what I mean? That's because that's the world. There's a small population, but there is a population of intersex people who are
absolutely
neither.
And there are, you know, there are, especially with the, I say the young folks, but there are a big group of them who don't identify as either male or female, and I'm totally fine with that.
And I think it allows people to have a reality-based system, mm-hmm. rather than saying, let's pretend that it's just two, and you decide, let's figure out a workaround for everybody who doesn't want to abide by the two. That's what we're dealing with now. Mm-hmm. And it's just nuts. This is the reality, is that there's male, female, and then there are those who are not male or female.
Who don't identify as male
right.
or female. And I think a big problem, a big portion of that has to do with gender conformity. And, you know, I think that goes a long way. Just because a male, we need to wrap up.
We do need to wrap. It's 2:00 already. We are completely out of time. Have a happy parade day. Next week, our guest is Neil Cazares-Thomas, senior pastor at Cathedral of Hope. And we will see you then.